So research that I'm going to be talking about this morning takes place in Kenya, which is located in sub-Saharan Africa. And as many of you might be aware, the major crop constraints are soil degradation and limited access to inorganic nitrogen fertilizer. And one really important thing to remember about soil degradation in sub-Saharan Africa is that about 40% of the soils are inherently low in nutrients, and then over the years they've been depleted further due to intensive management practices. And one strategy that we've tried to implement over the past few years has been integrated soil fertility management. And the principles behind this are, one, to address short-term nutrient deficiencies with mineral fertilizers, and then combining this with adding organic residues, such as plant residues, to enhance nutrient uptake and also to promote soil organic matter buildup and long-term soil fertility. Now, the extent to which these organic residues can promote soil organic matter buildup heavily depends on the residue quality. And so we can just kind of envision and predict the different type of residue qualities that are available to farmers in Kenya. And the first is thinking about residue qualities that contain low C to N ratios. These are residues that will decompose quickly and perhaps have a greater opportunity to contribute to quick nutrient uptake and greater yield, but may potentially be slower at building up that long-term total soil carbon. The second would be thinking about higher or plant residues that have higher C to N ratios. Because of that slower decomposition, slower nutrient release, you likely get lower yields, but you might be able to get long-term carbon stabilization over time. Now, of course, for optimizing soil health, we want to try to target both quick nutrient release, but also building up soil organic matter for long-term benefits. And being able to find out where a system is along this trajectory, you can use different soil health parameters to inform management decisions. So the research objectives for this research were to first determine how soil health parameters and yield respond to different residue incorporation varying in quality in the presence and absence of inorganic nitrogen fertilizer across sites varying in soil type. And then we're also interested in identifying which soil health parameters best predict maize yields at each site, again, hoping to implement better management practices for yield. So the experiments took place in western Kenya. These are long-term field trials that were established in 2002. This northern site is a sandy loam site, and then the southern site is a clay site, and both of these sites are receive the same amount of precipitation. And of course, the main factors that we're comparing are residue quality and the presence and absence of fertilizer. And we had a system that was randomized complete block designs with four reps. And the sampling occurred in the spring of 2015, right before the short rainy season. We sampled to a depth of 15 centimeters. So just to give you a better idea of these site characteristics, you can see here the huge difference in soil organic matter between the clay and sandy sites. Also a pretty big difference in cation exchange capacity, and then the breakdown of soil texture. You have a clay site versus a pretty sandy site. And then just a brief background on the residue treatments that we're comparing here. So the first is corn stover or maize stover, which is pretty readily accessible to farmers. It just takes education rather than having farmers either sell the biomass or burn it. we know that this is a lower quality residue, lower nitrogen content, high C to N ratio. Tithonia, I don't know if many people are familiar with this, but it's also known as the Mexican sunflower. It's a higher quality residue, and we incorporated this before the flowers bloomed. And it's actually more difficult for farmers to access this. It takes a lot more labor to harvest it and then incorporate it into the soils. So in terms of the soil health parameters, we did look at all of these. I won't have time today to go through all of these processes, but again, we're interested in soil organic matter pool dynamics, looking at mineralizable carbon, a biological process, and then soil protein, which we can think of as a test that reflects the organically bound pool of nitrogen in the soil. And then I'll also just show total carbon. But these two processes better reflect, you know, CRIC nutrient access, and then total carbon, of course, is a much more slow-moving, slower-to-change parameter. So for the 24-hour mineralizable carbon, the way that all of these graphs are set up, I have the clay versus sandy loam site, and on the x-axis we have the silver versus Tithonia, and in gray we have the fertilized treatments versus the unfertilized in black. So at the clay site, we don't see any difference in either fertilizer or residue quality in terms of this mineralizable carbon, which reflects the labile carbon pool. But we do see this distinction at the sandy loam site where the Tithonia, what we would consider a higher quality residue, is increasing that mineralizable carbon. While there isn't a fertilizer effect, there was definitely a residue effect. And we see the same kind of pattern for soil protein. Again, this is reflecting the organically bound pool of nitrogen. At the clay site, for the fertilized system, there's no difference between Tithonia and Stover. And then we do see a little bit of a bump in the unfertilized treatments. But then for the sandy loam site, again, we see this distinction where the Tithonia is increasing this soil protein parameter. And then thinking about, of course, total soil carbon, we see that there's no difference. And this is typically what we see. Just a slow-moving pool that just takes quite a bit of time to change. And so, you know, we had predicted that maybe the corn stover, slower to decompose residue might contribute to greater carbon accumulation, greater stabilization, but that was not the case. And then we look at grain yield. So again, at the clay site, neither residue quality nor fertilizer, which is kind of surprising, seems to influence the grain yield. But then when we look at the sandy loam system, we see differences in fertilizer and residue quality. So again, this Tithonia is bumping the grain yield up almost to where the levels of this clay site are in the fertilized system, and then even in the unfertilized system, again, you get this yield bump with Tithonia. So the next question that we wanted to address is, which soil health parameters best predict agronomic performance? And I'm using the word predict in a multilinear regression sense of the word. So we used subset regression models in R to use all of the soil health parameters that I showed initially in a model, and then the model selects the best predictors of grain yield. And so what's going on here? We have the clay site versus the sandy site in the ranking order. At the clay site, we have medium palm, mineralizable carbon, and large palm. And it seems like two out of the three predictors are actually reflecting that more of that labile carbon pool, which is what we tend to expect. But for the sandy site, we have medium palm, soil protein, and total carbon, which it's actually really surprising to see total carbon as a predictor of yield. I see many faces in the audience kind of surprised by that. But I think what's going on here is that the sandy site is so inherently low in soil fertility that even though we saw that Hithonia was increasing the labile carbon pool and the grain yield, to really get yield bumps at that lower fertility site, we might need more of an aggressive sustainable management approach other than just adding above ground residues. It could be that it needs intercropping, living roots to really target these more processed pools of carbon that could over time increase the grain yield. So in summary, the addition of Tithonia led to greater maize yield, active carbon, and soil protein at the sandy site. So what we predicted, the higher quality residue, faster to decompose, influences the more labile pools of carbon and also increased yield. But we only saw that at the sandy site. In general, there was no influence of residue quality on soil health parameters or yield at the clay site. And again, this could be that it's harder to influence labile carbon pools in sites higher in fertility. The residue quality had no influence on total carbon. And the extent to which different soil carbon fractions predicted yield varied by site. So in thinking of using these predictors to implement management practices, it's important to not only think of the short-term benefits of improving the labile carbon pools, but thinking about what we can do for long-term soil fertility. And just thinking about some implications for this, residue incorporation needs to be site-specific to optimize soil health and crop productivity. As I mentioned earlier, Tithonia is very labor-intensive to incorporate in the soil. So farmers who have higher quality soils that are heavy in clay, it wouldn't be worth adding the higher quality residue. But if you're at a sandier site, it may be beneficial to think about adding the more labor-intensive residue quality. And then finally, just identifying which soil carbon fractions contribute to enhanced yields at specific sites is really important in terms of targeting management for increased crop performance and long-term soil health. So with that, I'll just thank my co-authors and the field crews and lab technicians and my funding source. I'm happy to take any questions.
So regarding the filling in the yield bump, presumably this yield bump is only one growing season for an application. Is the intention to follow it on with multiple applications and multiple?
Well, I should have. Thank you for asking. I forgot to mention that yield is actually an average over 4 years. So this is a trend that we've been seeing over time. So they both receive around 100 centimeters of rain per year. Mm-hmm. And I didn't show, I have two other sites in central Kenya that receive much lower rainfall, and there was no residue quality effect for either site, either the sandy or clay site.
Yeah, so in practice, you show some practice was data on the maize farm yield increase. But in practice, I would use to tell me this system. So we know there's so much literature from the 1990s that it's very good at assimilating phosphorus from the soil. But it do not takes up phosphorus, but then so it's a biomass transfer system kind of. And long term sustainable farming, what's your comment on this?
So you're saying that it reduces phosphorus over time?
Yeah, I mean, the mechanism why, you showed CN ratio of 12, which is great, beautiful, almost like a legume.
Right.
When it's not fixed nitrogen. Right?
Exactly.
So the next question would be, what is the source of that nitrogen? Two, we also know there's so much literature on phosphorus or Tithonia. I'm from that region, so I've done some work with it on this. So there's so much known already that Tithonia is very good there. Taking up soil phosphorus, and then if you transfer that biomass, basically they're transferring nitrogen and phosphorus and nitrogen from somewhere else to the field where you are doing. So for experimentation, you'll get beautiful data. Yet, in practice, not many farmers are using it.
Right.
It's more like so much there is left out there when your data shows this view.
Mm-hmm.
So what, there's a contradiction.
Yeah, no, it's definitely true that not as many farmers are using Tithonia because it's harder to access and the labor intensiveness. What I would say is obviously these sandy soils are craving some type of nitrogen source. So whether it be intercropping, adding some other type of residue that's more accessible, any type of way that you can add readily decomposable organic matter into that system would be beneficial for lower fertility fields.
I noticed, I think your soil, your pH was low in both of your sites.
They're about
5.2.
Yeah.
So what role is that playing in the decomposition of these residues? And are the farmers doing anything to increase the pH to make it, most arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi like things a little bit higher than that. So what role is this pH playing in?
Yeah, that's a good point. Farmers aren't adding like calcium or any other properties that might increase pH, but I think if you can increase that organic matter input, then over time you'd slowly be able to increase the pH. But I haven't really thought too much about the pH factor just because they were similar between the two sites.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.